Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
The subject is financial meltdowns and what happens after. Here's the line. People think in herds. They also go mad in herds. Quote, while they only recover their senses slowly and one by one. That's not from 2010. It's from 1852. Scottish journalist Charles Mackay wrote about these financial meltdowns. You're listening to The Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Greetings. This is David Brancaccio sitting in for Brian. We're starting today by talking about what is next for the economy. Are we recovering slowly, one by one, or are we about to hit another rough patch with all that means to jobs, selling or buying a house, and really our common future? The government in recent days offered its first official economic assessment of April through June, that quarter, and it was, to quote my grandmother, the economy in the second quarter grew at a rate of just 2.4%. The technical term for that is not fabulous. And here to help us understand is Diane Brady of Bloomberg Businessweek and a familiar voice, Charlie Herman, business and economics editor here at WNYC. Diane, Charlie, welcome.
Thank you.
Nice to be here.
Thanks, Diane. First to you. Okay, so as we came to the end of last year, 2009, for comparison, GDP, economic growth, was running at about 5%. Now the rate is less than half. Now, you spent a lot of time talking to senior business management. Is this figure somehow a reflection of their caution?
I think it's a reflection of a few things. One is you had a terrible, terrible quarter they were being compared against, obviously, the period you're talking about, the end of last year. And we had a lot more stimulus that was a factor in the GDP. And I think, finally, we've seen a lot of restocking because there were a lot of inventory levels that got very low during the worst of the crisis. So we're seeing companies with record cash on their books. They've had a very good quarters in terms of earnings, but they're not willing to hire again. And I think finally we're seeing a day of reckoning with that in terms of the GDP numbers. It's the consumer that's the problem.
Yeah, and then there you said it, not willing to hire. What's it going to take to get these folks to hire some folks?
I think a lot of it is confidence. There's been a lot of unpredictability, and that's not just in terms of the economy. It's in terms of regulation. We know there's been a lot of fear, for example, as to what Washington's going to do. And I think there's been a lot of fear about what's happening in other markets like Europe and Asia. So I think some of it is just simply a wait and see, and jobs is always a lagging indicator. This time it seems to be lagging even more, and one of the issues may be that some of those investments brought us technologies that may require you to hire a few people this time around.
Yeah, you know, technology seems to do that, right? They bring in some fancy new equipment, and one person can do the job of 10, and that becomes part of the problem. Charlie Herman, I got to ask you here about this. There was a quote in the New York Times from when the GDP came out the other day in which even though things are growing, it's not going down, things are growing.
And it's been growing for a year, which is good.
Yeah, one analyst says it's going to feel like a recession for maybe the rest of the year. I mean, that's no good.
No, and I think that it's what Diane was talking about, that there really is a bit of this disconnect between perhaps how well businesses are doing. If you look at the last 2 weeks of earnings that we got from companies, overall it was pretty good for many of them, and yet they are not confident to hire, or they have become more efficient during the Great Recession, as it's sort of been dubbed. They laid off a lot of employees and yet found that they could still continue to see good returns and good profits. So there's not a rush to bring people back. And this has been a trend that clearly we've reported on for many years now, but a lot of manufacturing jobs are now overseas. So there's not this old tradition of you lay off a lot of manufacturing jobs, and then once the economy starts to rebound, you have a huge surge in manufacturing hiring. And that brings back a lot of people to work. I mean, it's interesting. If you look at the jobs figures, numbers, you will see there one of the areas where there is some very small growth is in manufacturing, but it's just not at the level that it was before. And so that means a lot of people are still out of work, and there's this disconnect between an economy that's growing, albeit slower, businesses raising more money and have more profits, and yet still unemployment's high and people just don't feel like the economy is actually recovering.
I mean, what you're describing is a little bit terrifying, because if you put it in even more plain English, companies have learned how to do what they have to do with fewer workers during this recession. And, yeah. And if it's working for them in terms of profits, I guess maybe they don't need you and I.
Oh, and then to Diane's point about this being unsure about regulations, I would add on top of that the polarization that you're seeing going on in Washington. I mean, when you have the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which represents many, in particular small businesses, that is very much opposed to many of the proposals from the administration or has been very doesn't like what they're seeing coming out of Washington politics or Washington policy, it makes it very difficult to perhaps find some fiscal policies that could help the economy. And you also look at the fact that there's a real worry both on the left and the right about the deficit. The government stepping in now may be difficult to do to help the economy where it's at right now.
Diane Brady, there's, you know, you work for Bloomberg Businessweek in a Brand X financial paper this morning. I won't say what their name is. Might have had Wall Street in their title or something. They pointed out that some of this may be a matter of priorities in the boardroom, that when some companies take their profits that they've been making, they have been using the money to buy back some of their stock instead of making other investments that might presumably also lead to some jobs. In other words, it's great if you hold stock in the company because maybe your stock will go up because of the mm-hmm. buyback, but it doesn't always help those of us struggling to hear if we might get hired.
I think that's a great point. There is, as I mentioned, record cash on the books. So companies aren't quite sure what to do with their cash. Normally, you would think, go out and hire, but hiring requires demand. So this isn't just simply a selfish exercise to boost the stock price. If you're not sure there's going to be demand for your products, especially if the consumer is a big part of who's buying those products, you're not going to go out and hire that quickly because it's just too difficult to sort of hire and fire. It's much easier to go out, put that money to use with some investment, some more R&D spending perhaps, buying back your stock. So I think people are expecting hiring to pick up. It is starting to pick up, but it's been very slow, and it's slow for a lot of reasons. But one is there's still this volatility, and it's from when are Americans going to start buying again?
I think it was Henry Ford, right? He had problems in some of his political philosophies and other things, but he did recognize that he had to pay his workers enough so that they go out and actually buy his cars. And that's sort of the vicious cycle that the economy may be in, if I'm hearing you correctly, which is if we're getting more efficient at doing with fewer workers, well, then how is the consumer going to get the money to buy the stuff that would encourage your business to grow?
One good sign is that savings rates are up, and typically when you look at the last recessions, we are not generally a population that tends to want to keep a lot of money in our bank accounts. So once people are feeling flush, there is a chance they'll go out and spend. Now, whether they'll go more down market is something that people debate, but there is a feeling consumer sentiment will pick up, but it will require jobs. It will require predictability. There's going to be some issues, surely, with taxes, as that's now being debated. And so I think there are a lot of factors to get people out.
Whether or not the previous administration's tax cuts will be allowed to expire.
Exactly.
I mean, that is a huge fight right
now. So people are nervous.
And I'd also just add that I really don't feel that, you know, in 2008, in the fall of 2008, when everything was falling apart, there was really this pressure, even in the middle of a political season, right before the presidential election, to do something. Something had to be done. And now I sort of feel like we're in this malaise, this period of, yeah, we've got growth for the past year, but it's not spectacular, but we're still moving along, and you don't want to force companies to hire if they're not sure there's going to be demand. So there isn't this pressure that's out there to really do something to try and get the economy going again. And there's also just a lot of fatigue, I think, with trying to fix the economy.
Careful, you use that malaise word, Charlie. Look what happened to President Carter when he did that. Oh, my goodness. Now, listen, there's something I've been thinking about. I'm the one who started this GDP thing here this morning and trying to describe the health of the economy through the prism of this one figure. Maybe that is a bad thing to do. GDP is a strange thing. We almost use it as a barometer for the national zeitgeist. If it goes up briskly, things must be going great. But first of all, we've already discussed that if it's going up, that may not be connected to jobs. But mm-hmm. there is a growing critique about the GDP. Maybe it doesn't measure what we want to measure. Diane, I don't know if you followed this at all, but I was really interested to see that, for instance, a guy at J.P. Morgan Chase this summer calculated that the Gulf oil spill, this disaster in the Gulf, is actually good for GDP. I mean, you know, if we want to stay out of a double-dip recession, the conclusion has to be maybe we need more environmental disasters because, they hired workers to clean it up. That helped GDP.
It's a good point. And what GDP doesn't measure wealth distribution, which has been a growing problem in this country. The wealthy get wealthier and everybody else doesn't. It doesn't measure the underground economy. And mostly it doesn't measure sentiment. And I think more than any country perhaps in the world, American sentiment is very much tied to how people feel about their home prices. It's their major source of equity. And if home prices are starting to drop, people don't feel like spending, regardless of all the other measures about how well the economy is doing.
And I would also just add that I think sometimes what's good for economists is not necessarily always good for the consumer. I mean, when you look at things like inflation, there's the inflation figure and then there's the core inflation, where they take out food and they take out gasoline to sort of look at things that don't fluctuate as much. And from an economic point of view, while it makes sense to sort of try and isolate products and items that sort of stay pretty consistent, that's not where the real Americans live. They live paying for food and they pay for gasoline. And as that fluctuates wildly, that determines how much money they have. And yet that's constantly stripped out. And you look at core inflation versus overall inflation. So I think in many cases, economists are looking at things that perhaps are not exactly where the average American lives in terms of especially sentiment, as Diane was saying.
I think economists are very, very good at measuring transactions where dollar figures are attached, where there's money that changes hands. And I think there's this growing recognition that's really quite interesting to me that life and the economy is more than dollar transactions. For instance, in the Gulf, as I understand it, if a fisherman loses work because of the Gulf oil spill, and that will be recorded as a drag on GDP, people who are getting hired to clean it up is a good thing for GDP. But it turns out actually what happens to the fish, the fisheries, the natural resource, GDP doesn't really account for that. Mm-hmm. It doesn't account for a person who wants to do volunteer work helping a Cub Scout troop or working in the home. And it's actually a really interesting idea about whether or not maybe the GDP should be thrown out as the great gauge on just how well we're doing. It's going to be a while before that happens, I think.
I don't think it'll be thrown out because it does. You do want to measure economic output, and you also want something consistent to see how we're doing against other countries. But you point to a good reality, which is it's just one factor, and especially when people start looking at the cost to the environment, as you mentioned, and some of the other longer-term issues that we're dealing with, even access to credit. We forget that we're not going to get the easy money that we had before, and when people aren't getting that, they also don't feel like spending. So there's many factors that are not going to be measured by that, but it's certainly one that gives you a sense of where we're going.
Now, we had an interesting comment from Bob in Queens. He wants to ask you, really. I'll start with you, Charlie. Economist Paul Krugman is still begging the federal government, to spend billions of dollars more. The stimulus, should not be allowed to lapse.
Good luck.
This is an economy that needs a shot in the arm. The only problem is how are we going to pay for it, right?
Good luck with that. I mean, I think there really is this, as I've been saying, this lack of real pressure out there. You don't have the economy collapsing. You have Republicans and Democrats very worried about deficits and talking much more about deficits than they are talking about any new spending programs. This proposal that the president has about small businesses, he says is being stymied by Republicans. Republicans disagree with that. I mean, it is not the environment right now, I think, where you could get a $700 billion bank rescue plan or a nearly $800 billion stimulus plan through Congress right now. If anything, what you're seeing, especially at the state and local levels, which are really cash-strapped, is that they're actually retrenching, that they don't have the money. And in those states, many of them which require balanced budgets, the last thing they can do is actually spend more. So I just don't see that happening. Krugman may be pushing for that, and some may agree that that's what needs to be done. But I just don't see the real politic of that actually happening.
Well, Diane, what do you think? I mean, sometimes the economy is just crying out so loud for a boost that sometimes the government just has to spend the money.
There's two arguments. I mean, right now we feel like we're in this sort of middle ground, and people talk about a lost decade and compare us to Japan. And, you know, what Krugman's argument is get more stimulus, get more people hired, and create this virtual circle, basically. But there's also
virtuous
an argument
circle,
of,
right? That's what you're saying?
You know, a circle where people are working, they feel good, they spend, and, you know, we get everything back on track again, and we can worry about deficits later on. But there's also a camp saying, let's try and flush this all out. We haven't seen a true day of reckoning with housing prices, with commercial real estate, with all these toxic loans. You know, there's this sense that we haven't really dealt fundamentally with some of the problems that are weighing us down. So I think what has some people frustrated is we're in this middle path at the moment where we're growing, we're not growing that much. There's some hiring, but we're not hiring that much. Most of the people we speak to feel that there is this balance right now where the deficit is so high that you start to worry about the dollar. And if anything makes people feel poor, it's watching the dollar plummet. So while Krugman has a good point, there's many arguments against what he's suggesting.
And now the big word you're hearing people talk about is deflation, that this could become an issue. And I think that that's a... it's a significant enough problem, this worry that the dollar could lose in value, that prices could actually drop, and that poses yet another problem for the government to try and address. I mean, it does feel like the Federal Reserve has used so many of its bullets to try and save the economy. There is this sense of, I think Diane's completely right, we're in this middle ground and kind of hoping that things get better, because if they don't, it's a little bit of a question of what are we going to do if they don't.
We should explain, though, about deflation, because we have grown up, you know, anybody who's over about 5 years old grew up in a environment of inflation, and we don't like it when prices go up. What's the problem if prices were to go down? Things get cheaper. What's so bad about that?
Who do you want to weigh in, me?
Yeah, Diane, you can start. You can start with
I'm
it, right?
I'm Scottish, so technically I love cheap prices. But I think one of the big problems, obviously, is people get less money for their goods and services. They hire fewer people, and so you want there to be a value attached to services and goods that actually results in profits being made, and those profits channeling toward jobs. So one of the big problems with deflation is, yes, the impact on currency. People are able to buy less, but the reality is they have less money, and they tend to earn less, so wages go down as well. So it's just this general sense that, you know, things are flat and going down. I probably didn't explain it
that
well.
No, you did very well. And also, of course, there's the other element, right, Diane, that you were about to say, I think, which is that if you kind of think that the thing you're interested in buying is just going to be cheaper in a week or two, you wait. And then maybe you wait again, and you just delay the purchase because you think it's going to keep falling, like if it's a house or something.
It does tend to dampen consumption, and most importantly, for businesses, it tends to dampen your desire to invest, your desire to stock up. If a business is not optimistic that it's going to have profits, then it's not going to hire. It's not going to put more goods in the stores. We've seen that one of the reactions to the crisis was we saw inventory levels really slashed. It was actually hard to get hot items in a store. So you take deflation, which is now a real risk, and that's one thing that could become a much bigger problem, which is business investment and businesses' desire to go out there and spend.
All right, so deflation, not such a good thing. Okay, a couple quick answers here just before we go. I want to try out a couple of theories that I've heard about why the boss is not hiring more people. We already covered the technology issue. The boss learned that he could do it with fewer people. You talked about that. But what about this one? Uncertainty over the implementation of health care reform. Top brass doesn't quite know how much it'll cost them to bring health care insurance to their employees, so they're just kind of waiting. Charlie, you think that's an excuse?
I think that's a factor. I think it's a factor if you combine everything else that's going on. And I don't know the specific mindset of one particular business owner, but I think if you add in everything else that's going on, new financial regulations that could impact them, concerns about consumer spending, worries about just the overall state of the economy, imports and exports, can they ship their goods overseas? Will there be people in Europe willing to buy them? And then now you add in healthcare, I think it just adds to another element of concern about hiring.
You hearing that too, Diane?
I think so. It's not a major issue. I think that your bigger issue in terms of hiring is finding the right people. There's much more specificity these days about who you want. So employers I talk to are waiting. They're holding out in a way to get the right people.
And that is a topic for another day, education of the American workforce, and have we trained the right people for the right jobs? Well, listen, thank you very much, Diane Brady of Bloomberg Business Week.
Thank you.
WNYC's familiar voice, Charlie Herman, who's business and economics editor here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
David Brancaccio sitting in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC.